This station is not responsible for the problems that Mark may cause for the following: wives, mothers, daughters, ex-wives, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, stepmothers, daughters, and in-laws. If you find yourself agreeing with everything Mark says, please seek professional help.
Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and I'm here at your service, 602-508-0960. This is show is called Under the Hood with Mark Salem. We talk about cars, and I'm going to skip the brought to you by because we're going to get some of these callers real quick.
Yeah, okay? We're going to hit the ground running.
Exactly
today.
Right. I mean, that's my wife, Renee. She keeps track of me and counsels me about car repair.
Oh,
but
we're
gonna go
that's
to Bob first. Bob, good morning. What's up?
I have a 2006 Ford Ranger with a four-cylinder and a manual transmission. And what happens with this crazy thing is every once in a while, as you start going down the road, as soon as you get to your speed, you kind of back off on the throttle a little bit. And when the engine actually is being driven by the vehicle, it cuts out on the fuel. And I'm trying to find this vacuum leak somewhere between the throttle body and I guess it would be the filter air box. I'm not sure exactly if there is something. I know there's a PCV tube.
Wait a minute. You got to tell me how all of a sudden you got to a vacuum leak here.
Okay. It actually appeared the engine light came on, and it was throwing in a lean mixture code.
Okay, well, that doesn't mean a vacuum leak, so we're not going to go down that path because that doesn't mean it's a vacuum leak. It's a lean condition. A plugged fuel filter will cause a lean condition. A bad O2 sensor stuck in low voltage mode would cause a lean. And unless you have a scanner, you have no way of knowing whether or not that's going to be. And the guy, the three-whiskered kid at AutoZone and O'Reilly's wouldn't have a clue on how to fix your car, but they are very good at selling you parts. What you're talking about is the mass airflow sensor, and if your mass airflow sensor had a vacuum leak in the intake tube, then you would have a mass airflow sensor code, because the mass airflow sensor would say, hey, I see 17 grams of air, and the computer goes, well, that doesn't match all the other data from all the other sensors, and so after a while, it'll throw a mass airflow sensor code. I would strongly suggest that you have somebody track it down. Let me tell you a real quick story. I had a guy this week call me and talked to him because I called him back. He has an overheat condition, and he spent in excess of $3,000 trying to find it. And he's put a radiator in, and he's put hoses and belts, and he's had all kinds of stuff done, and he's working off of a diagnosis after a $20 oil change. And I said to him, there isn't a shop in town that wouldn't have diagnosed that between $100 and $200, why this thing's overheating and spitting coolant all over the air. And his thing he stuck on is that he can turn the water pump pulley with his hand in spite of the fact that the serpentine belt's on there. And yes, that's something a seasoned technician could touch and feel and see whether it's good or bad. But the idea is he spent a lot of money.
Right.
You can do whatever you want, but I suggest that chasing a PCV valve leak or a vacuum leak might not be the very best thing. But you're right. A PCV valve can do that. An EGR valve that's stuck open can do that. And as I said, fuel filter, O2 sensor, and all that stuff.
Okay. All right. Because it doesn't do it when I give it full throttle. It's when you back off on the throttle is when it cuts out.
Okay, and see, we can watch that on a scan. I understand, but we can watch that on a scanner. So really what has to happen is not on Monday morning or Friday night, call a shop and say, what's your diagnostic fee for a code as well as a drivability symptom? I would like very much to stop by your shop. Perhaps you could loan me your technician. I promise not to keep him for an hour. I promise I can pull this off in 15 minutes. And, you know, maybe he plugs in his scanner or whatever, and I'd like to take him for a ride. I'd like him to look at serial stream data while I make it happen. If you do that, and if you can pull that off, you'll save yourself $100 in diagnostic fees. You're still going to get charged for a diagnostic fee, but you're saving yourself $100 just by being prepared. Okay, Bob, thank you. Thank you. Bob, what part of town do you live in?
I live in Mesa.
Okay. Do you have a shop in Mesa that you like?
I have one I just started going to. I haven't really. I've done most of the work on my vehicles myself. Okay. So.
Well, I have one in Mesa. The only one in Mesa that I personally recommend is Thompson's Auto Repair, and he's on Main Street just east of Stapley. Brian and Thelma own and operate that, and I know Brian has the technician that's capable of diagnosing your problem. Now, it's also possible that we look at your car and we see so many different things that we say to you, wait till it gets worse and easier to find. Because this could also be a situation where we're dumping a bunch of air into the motor, into the exhaust, and that's causing a problem. So if all you got is a check engine light and you don't have any smells or anything else, there's a small possibility you're going to hear somebody say, let's wait till it gets a little worse and easier to find. What they're saying to you is I'll find it, but it's going to cost you a lot more now than if you wait 20, 30 days and make it, and it gets worse. So,
right.
Or another code gets
tossed. If I go in there and start, when I start going in there and messing with it, the light, it goes off. So I know it's somewhere along those tubes. I pulled them off and looked at them. I still can't find the leak anywhere.
No, you're wrong about that. There is a long process to turn the light on. And then there is intermittent. It's not uncommon for us to lose the code and then have the light go off. So I don't think there's a relationship in what you said. But thank you very much. Thank you very much. Richard, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hello.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Okay. I had a transmission problem, and I spent about 2 months with this. It went in what they call a fail-safe. It'd lock up, and then I'd turn it off, and as it got colder, it got worse, and one transmission shop never could duplicate it. So I finally went to your 140th Street in Washington to Automatic Transmission Exchange and told him what it did. He called me back the next morning promptly. He says, yeah, it did it, and this, and he got the code. The other shop could never get the code, but it would clear itself before I got there. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he called me and told me what it needed, and the next day called back and says, this is what we're looking at, and it was a computer is what it was.
Okay. And it's
fixed. I picked it up yesterday, and it's fixed. He's very knowledgeable, and he told me exactly what he was going to do, and he did it. And that's what I liked, because the other shop gave me nothing but a runaround. The other thing, I got a question.
Okay.
About the last 2 weeks, I'd be on freeway speeds. It would act like a fuel problem. But now, since I picked it up yesterday, there's none of that. Could that have been in the computer, too, causing that?
Oh, absolutely. There's lots of things. And what can I just change your words a tad? It feels like I don't have any more throttle. It feels like I can't accelerate. Is that kind of what it is? You say?
Yeah, it would kind of like it was starving, then it would catch again.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, you're right that that would be a common classic symptom of fuel starvation. But if it's gone now with the transmission, here's what I want to tell you. I would tell you if you're my brother or you're my customer. Just be glad that fixed both problems. It's not worth chasing down why or how they're related, because that's not going to get anybody anywhere. But it really depends on the code and what gear he was working in. And it's entirely possible that lockup, where it was locking up and not unlocking, the smooth operation of it today creates or fixed that symptom. So I can't answer your question, but I want to tell you this. Thank you for talking about Automatic Transmission Exchange and a success story. It's another shop. It's the only shop in Phoenix that I recommend for transmission work. So I'm happy he fixed your problem. And I want you to say that I am completely happy with them after 30 days.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I tell my customers the same thing. You'll know in 30 days if I did a good job. So don't be yelling and screaming about how good I am until you've driven the car for 30 days. So I would say the same to you for Automatic Transmission Exchange.
Yeah, I went out there at 7 o'clock this morning. It was cold, and it didn't do it. And the colder it got, the worse it got. And Phil also said that that'd be more of a computer thing with the coldness.
Yeah.
But it was but I've been chasing this thing down for 2.5 months, so I'm sure it's fixed. It feels good.
Good. Yeah. Thank you very much for that kind words. Thank you.
And I think we've been having that too, where you think it's the transmission and actually it seems to be, I don't know why that seems to be more prevalent now.
Well, what's the name of that gentleman? Sid?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, Sid, real quick, and I'm going to get to Wayne. Yeah. Sid has a General Motors product.
Right.
And he has this drivability concern. And so I initially, based on talking with him, said, I think we have a transmission problem. So he brought it in, and I consulted with the transmission guy in Tempe that does wholesale work only. and I consulted with Lorenzo, and he said, yes, I want you to put this additive in the transmission, and I think this will make it better if it's what you, Mark Salem, described.
Yeah.
So we put the additive in, and Sid said after, what, 2 weeks, in no difference.
Right.
We brought the car back in, and we determined that what was really happening was is that he had cylinder select. Otherwise, he's driving down the road with an eight-cylinder car, and when the computer determines that it could drop two cylinders or four cylinders, it will. So the car could be going down the road in cruise control at 70 miles an hour with four cylinders hitting and four mm-hmm. cylinders dead.
Right.
Well, this cylinder select was all fouled up,
mm-hmm.
and the cylinder select was causing the symptoms exactly like a transmission. So rather than go in and dig this problem out,
yeah.
we were able to purchase a device that would remove that cylinder select from his car.
Mm-hmm.
It was significantly less than any diagnosis and repair. It was an amazing. So I'll tell him $250.
Right, and he was expecting. We gave him an estimate. I think between $2,000 and $3,000 for the transmission, and that was
we would have been rebuilt.
And it wouldn't have worked.
Yeah.
So we would have
had to refund the money to him
right.
because we told him this will fix it, and it didn't.
Right.
So this $250 gizmo that Alan, our son, came up with, mm-hmm. we plug it in. And it takes out cylinder select, and Sid said on his last call.
Yeah, he called us the other day and said it runs perfectly and no issues at all. So,
and the only thing that might happen
ecstatic.
Here is he might have a degradation, a small, probably not measurable, difference in fuel economy.
Yeah,
he didn't say anything
about that.
So at the end of the day, I think his total cost was some chemicals that we dumped in his transmission, which was $20, I bet.
Yes, it was.
And then $250 for this gizmo where we bypassed that system.
Right.
We took that system away. We mm-hmm. told the computer, don't look at that anymore. And the problem's fixed.
Right.
That could have easily been an ugly one had I sold him a transmission.
1 minute.
Yeah.
That
you
would
were
have
wrong.
Been,
Salem,
I would have been
wrong.
I would have raised my hand.
Yeah.
I was wrong 44 years ago when I married you at 10 years old. Wayne, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Yeah, hello, Mark. I have a 1999 Safari van. I went in for an oil change, and they said I had two problems.
Okay.
The first one was the wheel bearing was bad. I had 20,000 miles on that wheel bearing. And I said, well, what were the symptoms? And he says, well, you got a wobble.
Okay.
Well, they want to remove and replace the right front, but they also suggest I do the left front. And I was wondering why they want to do both of them.
Okay. Well, first of all, let's get to the symptoms. Does this wobble mean anything to you? Do you know what they're talking about?
Well, I think it means they put their hands on the top and the bottom of the tire and they
all right. Strike one. Strike one.
But do you feel the wobble?
Yeah. Do you have anything in the front end at all that you're concerned with or you hear or you feel?
No.
All right. Let me give you a symptom of a bad wheel bearing, okay? Do you drive on the freeway?
Okay.
Do you drive on the freeway?
No.
Okay. Is that a no?
Okay. No, I don't drive on the freeway.
Okay. So if you get on the freeway and you're driving down the road and you're going to take a sweeping right turn or left turn, maybe you're getting off the freeway, maybe you're transitioning from the 17 to the 101 or whatever, whatever. When you're driving at highway speeds and you transition and you turn a gradual right turn at highway speeds, if the inner wheel bearing on the right side or the outer wheel bearing on the left side is bad, it'll go, yeah, and it'll be speed related. You throttle up, yeah, and you throttle down, yeah. Okay? So, that's a bad wheel bearing. I would think that you would know that. I would think for sure you'd know that. So, if you go left, here's the kicker. If it's the left outer wheel bearing, it'll do it on a right sweeping turn, but it will not do it on a left sweeping turn. Because we unload that bearing when we make a left turn. So, as we go through this, the symptoms are negative. I don't like what you're telling me. I'm going to recognize that what you're telling me may not be 100% of the discussion. But if my guys were to do something like that and look at your odometer and then tell you, well, if you have one bad, then the other's going to follow. So why don't we just do both of them now? This is what I think about that. If you've got one bad tooth, why don't we pull them all? Mm-hmm. If you've got one bad eye, why don't we do surgery on the other one? If you've got an ingrown toenail, let's go ahead and service all 10 of them.
I don't like that idea. I there is no benefit. This is not an alignment issue. And boy, you've just wadded up my underwear.
Oh,
this is not an alignment issue. They're not going to have to align it twice when they do the wheel bearings. That would be a reason to do both of them. But I'm quite sure that this repair was between $600 and $800. How close am I?
Oh, it wasn't that much. It was $264.
For both wheel bearings?
Well, that's probably for the one, yeah.
Okay.
All right, so we're twice that much money. Right. We're at five.
You're saying I don't have much of a problem there then?
Well, I'm saying if you don't have the symptoms I just described to you, and the only thing we got is they grabbed a hold of the top and the bottom of the wheel and they gave it a little shake, and you don't have a yeah when you make a right and a left turn at 45 miles an hour or higher, if you don't have any abnormal tire wear, then I would think.
I have none of that.
Yeah, okay. And it's probably one of those things where it was maybe a cheap oil change and they had to upsell you, but we can get on that, after the break.
And you're right about that, but here's something else. I think that Safari van, does it have two wheel bearings or is it an entire hub assembly with sealed bearings within? Do you know?
It said it has one in the front and one in the back.
Okay, so I'm wrong on my
on the same wheel.
Okay, I'm wrong on my 600 to 800 because I was assuming we were going to replace the hub with sealed bearings within. But if they've got wheel bearings and they're talking $264 a side, then what they're doing is they're pulling the rotor off. They're taking the races out, putting two new wheel bearings. They press them into the rotor. If they put a new seal, they pack those wheel bearings. They put them back on. All of a sudden, I'm still worried about the 250.
Okay.
I'm not liking the 250.
He's not sure, though.
So. I know, but you're right. But that's why I'm going to explain why I was so far off, because I'm bidding hubs on both sides, R&R hubs and the hubs, because the hubs are $180, $200 a piece.
Okay. So you're not wrong again.
You know what?
That's twice.
Let me just turn off your microphone, because that's easier for me. Nevertheless, I've had my piece, but he doesn't have the symptoms. Now, if he wanted to check, he would simply have somebody else pack the wheel bearings, and if one of the bearings is coming apart, there's going to be metal all over the inside of that.
Okay.
But again, he doesn't have the drivability symptoms that would suggest that he has a wheel bearing problem. And that wobble that they're talking about could easily be simply pull off the cap, adjust the tension nut a half a turn, put a new cotter pin in it, then the wobble's gone.
Okay.
Now let me just get my underwear out of my
we'll
backside.
Be right back after this.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Renee. She's supposed to, my wife, she's supposed to keep a track of me, and she doesn't do a very good job. 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto Repair. Tom and his crew at Action Auto Repair are I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. Been around since 1983. Have a master BMW technician, but it's because he's a master, he knows all the other cars as well, but he's especially good on BMWs. But like Tom says, we can do Chevy, Ford, Chrysler, Toyota, Honda, which is the big five big ones. And we can do all of those and a whole lot other ones. So if you live in the Deer Valley area, North Phoenix area, and you don't have a repair shop, may I suggest that you go for an oil change at Action Auto Repair at Deer Valley and I-17 and see how you like them. That's the easiest way to determine if a shop's going to treat you right or just sell you everything imaginable. Wayne, I know that you have another comment, and I'll take you real quick.
Okay, the other problem was they said I had a transmission cooler lines are leaking. That gets pretty expensive.
Okay. See, they just didn't give you enough information because the transmission cooler lines are metal lines, and they go forward into a cooler. And oftentimes there's two pieces of rubber that connect the stationary lines to another part of the cooler that might move, or the stationary lines move and the cooler doesn't. So we put some flexible lines in there. I want you to know that transmission cooler line is rather expensive. It might be $20 a foot. I can't imagine that it's going to take 2 feet of cooler line to fix this. But on the other hand, if it's the steel lines that have rubbed a hole in it, then you would have a whole lot of transmission fluid on the ground because those two steel lines hold a lot of pressure. So again, I'm not quite sure what they're talking about, whether they're talking about the rubber lines or the steel lines. But if it's
they're talking about the rubber lines.
Okay.
It has the rubber lines.
All right. Okay. And how much was that bid?
Oh, Jesus. A little over 500.
Oh, my God. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll do it for 400, guaranteed. I guarantee you, I'll do that for $400. Okay, and I'll be honest with you.
Does that include the flush?
I'll tell you. Yeah. I'll do both cooler lines, and I'll flush your transmission for $400 or less. Wait a minute.
It's leaking. We're not going to do it if it's not.
Okay. See, you're pragmatic about that kind of stuff. Okay. And I'll tell you something else on those wheel bearings, okay? I'll pack your front wheel bearings for $100, and if I find a bad one, I'll give it to you for free. How's that?
Yeah.
All right? What part of town do you live in?
I think you have a shop over about 88th Avenue in Thunderbird.
Tom over there at Fletcher's. Yeah, Tom Fletcher. Tell him he'll do the same deal. I'll commit for him. Yeah. I'll just send you over there and take your paperwork and talk to Tom and say, Mark's panties are a little wadded up about this deal, but I'd like you to give me a fresh pair of eyes on my transmission cooler lines and my wheel bearing wobble. Okay. Ask him.
Okay.
All right. Thank
because
you.
Because I told him I have nothing on the floor, no dropper or anything.
Minutes. Well, that's a problem. That's a problem. That's what you have to say. You have to step forward. You have to get in his bubble. And you have to say, I want to see these lines. I want you to put it back up on the rack. I'd like to see what you're talking about. I want to see what you're talking about. And then I want to feel the wheel bearing wobble. And by the way, there's another car right next to it. I want to feel its wheel bearing wobble too. And if both of them have the same wheel bearing wobble, then all of a sudden that guy is kind of looks bad in your eyes.
Yeah.
So anyway, I can't get past this. Tom, good morning, Tom. How you doing? What can we do for you?
Mark.
Hi.
Great show. Hey, my son put a 5.3 in an older 80 Blazer,
okay,
and it will not start when it's cold.
Is it a carbureted motor or a fuel-injected motor he put in?
No, it's fuel-injected. It's a 5.3.
Okay. So it's a carbureted one?
No. It's fuel injected.
Okay. It's fuel, and it won't start cold. Well, I guess the first thing that I would do is put a fuel pressure gauge on it, because when you turn the key to the on position, I should have, a fuel pressure well within standards. So whatever the requirement is, let's 45. When I turn the key on, I better have 45. But if I have nothing, then that's going to tell me that the fuel pressure regulator is bad, or the check valve in the tank and the pump is bad, or I've got an injector leaking down overnight, which destroys my fuel pressure, which gives me extended cranking during cold times. But the leak's not substantial that it's going to cause me problems during the day. So, yes, it's cold, but it's really because it's been sitting all night. You stay right there along with the rest of you. I'll be back because I'm out of time, and I'll be back in. Welcome back, everybody. I want to explain to them what's going on in my world, okay?
Okay.
All right. Gil's saying 15 seconds before. I have to break folks at exactly 30, not 30 after the hour plus 15 seconds. I have to be there at 30. Renee's pointing towards the clock. She's giving me the rap sign. Gil's talking in my ear, and I tell those guys I'll be back in 13 minutes.
Or less.
Or less.
You said or less.
And then that's because I'm looking. The first number that I get on my screen here is 13.
Plus your panties are in a wad.
Yeah,
so, you know.
And I'm having a tough time today with the show today. I'm just having a tough time. Anyway, let me tell you real quick about Kurt's Auto Repair. Kurt's Auto Repair is I-17 in Bell. He has bailed out customers that I have sent him many, many times, just as Tom at Action has just down the road. But Kurt's is a good guy. Eric is a master tech. Jeff is a master tech. Kurt's a master tech. They know what they're talking about. They are just as square as any shop in town is. So if you live near Bell and I-17 and you don't have a shop, then Kurt's should be a place that you should go to. Real quick, we were going to go back. And, I know what we're going to do. Daniel has a real quick question, so we're going to go to Daniel first.
Okay.
Daniel, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Mark. Listen, I just bought a 2000 Cadillac, 65,000 miles on it, and it's a nightmare with all those buttons all over. All what I want to know is I found the batteries under the back seat, and I'm wondering, there's not a birth date on the battery, so I was going to probably change it. So do you just pull it out, or do you have to put something in the cigarette lighter to keep all this computerized stuff going?
You can do that. You can plug in a 9-volt battery or something like that to the cigarette lighter to keep that. It's called keep alive memory. Keep alive, and it has all your seat settings and your radio settings. Yes, the answer is yes. You pull the negative cable first. You pull the positive second. You lift the battery out. I want you to vacuum out the container. I want you, if it's got drain holes in it, yeah, you might use a little bit of hot water. Clean it all up good. But before you do the battery, I would suggest you stop by a repair shop and say, can you test my battery? And here's how we do it. We look at the CCA rating on the battery. It might be 500. And so if I test your battery and you have 315 CCAs, I'm going to look at you and say, Daniel, I like the idea of you putting another battery in it. But if it has 500 CCAs on a 500 CCA, then there's really no reason to put a battery in it. So I suggest you do that.
Okay. Now, can you talk? Can I tell you where I want to go over the phone? To the auto repair?
If it's one of my shops.
Terrain Tree Auto Repair? Is that all right?
If it's one of my shops, yes. But if it's not one of my shops,
yeah,
then okay, because if it's not one of my shops, I don't want to comment. And if it's a shop I don't respect, I'm put in a spot. But if you want to tell me who you're going to take it to and it's a shop you've heard on the radio show, I'm interested.
Rain Tree. Okay. Rain Tree Auto.
All right.
Repair.
He's up there in North Scottsdale, and tell Paul
right there on range.
Yeah. When you talk to Paul, tell him that Mark Salem's going to send him a 25% off discount on your behalf.
Okay, now wait, but he does a body.
He does, but he's got a relationship with Paul and Andy at Rain Tree, so they'll swap out his battery for him, or they'll check his battery for him.
Okay,
so and if not, then Air Park Auto is right across the street, and you can go over to Air Park Auto. I don't know if
you recommend Air Park Auto over there, Steve and Andy.
Yes. Well,
okay,
good enough. Thank you.
Now, Tom, I don't know if you finished with him.
I am.
He had the cold start.
I'm sorry. You're right, Tom. Are you there?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Okay, Mark. Yes, I am.
Okay. I want to ask you something. Just a minute.
Yes. Go ahead.
This is what I'd like you to try, and this will help determine if I'm right about a fuel starvation problem. When you go to start the car in the morning on a cold morning, I want him to turn the key to the on position, not the crank position, but the on position, and count to three. Turn it off, and I want him to do that 3 or 4 times. I'm priming the system by turning the fuel pump on for 3 seconds each time. And it won't run 4 seconds, so that's the reason why I don't want him to do it for 10 seconds, because he's wasting his time. So on, 3 seconds, off. On, 3 seconds, off. What I'm doing is priming the system. If it starts then we actually have a loss of fuel pressure. And that will tell you. Now, if it doesn't start then, I still need to check the fuel pressure. But I also can look at the coolant sensor and see if it's talking to the computer. And I also want to know what the ambient temperature is and see if the computer can see that.
1 minute.
So there's a lot of that kind of stuff that has to go on behind the scenes. But 9 out of 10 times when it won't start cold, it's because of the absence of fuel. And if that's the case, it's usually a fuel delivery problem. That's why I'm going in that direction. Okay?
Okay. All right. Yeah, because he did tell me it was 52 pounds going through.
Okay, but like I said, I need that reading first time you turn the key to the on position, first thing on a cold morning.
Right.
So running pressure at 52 is quite different than morning pressure at 52. All righty. Good luck to you. Thank you very much.
Okay.
And let's go. I'm going to go to Randy because he's been waiting. Randy, good morning to you. You have my full attention.
Hey, Mark. I have a Ford F-250 7.3. Four-wheel drive. I had the driver's side bearing hub go out on it.
Okay.
I replaced it. In your opinion, should I do the other side?
How many miles?
260,000. 260.
Okay. I want you to change your question like this. Mark, how often do you do bad wheel bearings? maybe once a month. Mark, how many customers do you process a year? Do you know how many work orders do we have last year?
I don't know the answer to that yet.
Well, we're 13 a day times 5. Mm-hmm. Well, we're 13 to 15 a day times 5 mm-hmm. times 52 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So get your phone out and do that. So I'm going to guess that I'm dealing with wheel bearings maybe once a month. and they have symptoms. So we did 3,300 work orders, somewhere around 4,000 cars we serviced last year. And so the answer is no. I don't think I would do the other side unless you had a lot of time. And it, did you do it yourself?
Yes, it takes about an hour to do it.
Okay.
It's a whole unit. The,
right.
The hub assembly and the bearing is sealed, so you just undo the four bolts off the knuckle and pull it out and put the one in, and you're done. It's an easy job, but I was just, it failed on coming from home from Tucson. I really don't want that. Actually, it was making noise, and I didn't realize what the noise was coming from.
Okay.
And after it failed, I realized that noise was the bearing.
Yeah. Now, I got two thoughts about that. First of all, did you buy a bearing with a name brand that you recognize, like BorgWarner or something like that?
I bought a Timken.
Oh, good. You just... Can you tell I was excited that you got a name brand?
Rock Auto. Told me about Rock Auto, so I went on Rock Auto and bought a Timken.
Okay. All right. How much was the bearing? The assembly, the hub.
$173.
Okay. That's a good
the
price.
The whole thing, $173.
Yep. If it makes you feel good, spend another $173, spend another hour, and do it, and you'll be done. But I think the real message here is you missed the symptoms, and it's your fault you broke down.
I was shaking the – I shook the front end completely, and I didn't do one thing. I didn't jack it up and move the tire, and that would have told me right away.
Well, I can tell you something else. If you would have driven it from the driver's seat and made it happen, and then let's say you have a wife or a girlfriend, and I hope you don't have both, but one of them switches places with you, and when you're driving, your left foot is flat against the floor, and then when you get on the passenger side, your right foot's flat against the floor, and you would have known clearly with that bearing which side it's on. And then you could have jacked it up and shook the tire, and then you'd have known. So it doesn't make any difference. You got a lot of mileage on that 7.3. So if you want to do it for peace of mind, I say go ahead. But I think the real issue here really is you missed the symptoms, and this is all your fault. and I don't mean that. I don't mean to be derogatory.
It was the clicking. I could hear something clicking in the front end for probably 4 months. And I'm like, God, what is that? Is that a shock? No, God.
I just, you know what? There hasn't been a guy.
Home from Tucson.
There hasn't been a guy on the radio in the last 6 months that has admitted he's wrong.
Yeah.
So, Randy, you are my hero today because you're telling the story, you're laughing at yourself, you're admitting you're wrong, and I like it. I just had to do something, and I didn't make it back in time. Nevertheless, I want to say something real quick before we go on, and I'll tell you why. Our industry and the auto repair industry is kind of in shambles, and here's why. They make cars so good now that the maintenance that we used to do on the 70s and the 80s and the 90s and even the 2000s was quite different than the newer model cars. So there is a minority and a very small minority of our people in our repair industry that have huge debt service, and they're selling stuff well outside of what it says in your owner's manual. As a matter of fact, the other day I had a lady pull in to a service drive arena, and the other lady walked out and diagnosed her bad motor mounts to the tune of $1,200 or something like that. I want to tell you folks, if I stood in my driveway and you drove at me with your car, I don't care if you started driving at me a half a mile away and you came up and you parked in front of me, I couldn't diagnose one, much less four motor mounts on your car. That's not the symptom environment. So I'm kind of disappointed, but that's why I'm kind of adamant about shops upselling you, because a $20 oil change can't be done for $20. The oil's going to cost $10, the filter's going to cost $5, the technician's going to cost $6, and that's $21 right there. So those lowball oil changes are to create business and increase the ticket price. That's all there is to it. All right, let's go back to Jeannie. You're up next. Jean?
Jenny,
I'm sorry.
Jenny,
I wrote it,
get
and
it
I can't
straight.
Even do it.
I can't read your writing.
Jenny, I'm sorry. The floor is yours.
It's okay, because I've been called Jeannie all my life, and really it's Jenny.
Okay.
Anyway, sir, what I would like is a recommendation for a repair shop in the area of Hayden and McDowell.
Okay.
I used to use Advance on McClintock and Rural, but they've merged with Pet Boys.
Yes, ma'am.
And I'm not comfortable with that.
Okay. There's Bell Automotive at 87th Street and McDowell on the north side of the road. They are on their second generation. Craig and his wife now run it from their Craig's dad. Mm-hmm. And I want to tell you, they're honest. They're dependable. I've known them for 30 years because I knew his dad's name is Carol Bell. Mm-hmm. And it's a woman's name, but his name is Carol Bell. And I've known Carol for more than 30 years. And I know Craig, his son. And I'm telling you, you couldn't find a nicer, more honest shop than Bell Automotive. And 87th Street, as you probably know, is one block west of Pima.
Yes.
So I would
it's
suggest.
It's called Bell, B-E-L-L.
Yes, yeah. Ma'am. Bell.
And Vicky. Craig and Vicky work there, and she'd probably answer the phone. So.
Yeah, and Vicky's his wife. Mm-hmm. So Craig and Vicky are a husband-wife team, very much like Renee and I. I work for her. She tells me what to do. As you can tell. But anyway, Jenny, that is the closest place to you, and I'm happy to recommend them to you.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for taking my call.
You betcha, ma'am. Thank you very much for calling. Ken, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, good morning. Enjoy your show. Do you hear me well?
Yes, sir, I do.
Oh, very good. My daughter has an 06 Ford Expedition, and she's been having this problem for 2 years, throwing lots of money at it. Thing just drives down the road, runs very well when it runs, and just stops. And it stops and it restarts quickly after it quits. She's probably thrown $2,000 at this thing over the last 2 years. You know, the thing's basically unreliable. Pretty car, but, okay. Grossly unreliable. It'll do it about once a week, every 2 weeks, unrelated to hitting a bump, unrelated to railroad tracks or anything like that. And wondering if you had any thoughts on it.
Well, I think the very first thing, if that were my customer, is I would go ahead and rent her a fuel gauge, and I would attach the fuel gauge, and I would tape it through the hood of the crack of the hood, and I would tape it to the outside of the windshield and ask her to please take care of my gauge, and I would have her monitor the fuel pressure on my behalf. Now, if the fuel pressure is
one of the things that was done to it early on was changing the fuel pump. It has no codes currently. It had one code about 2 years ago that said the computer turned on the applied voltage to the fuel pump relay and nothing came out.
Okay.
Now, that was 2 years ago.
All right. We're not going to fix cars based on history, okay? We don't fix cars based on history.
Right.
So, if you want to dance some more around with money, then you're talking to the wrong guy. I don't care that somebody put a fuel pump in it because the test I'm suggesting is going to tell us about the stability of the fuel system. And so that's going to answer all the questions.
Okay.
But if she's driving down the road and all of a sudden the fuel pressure drops to zero, then at least I know it's fuel and it's not spark because it's one of two. So it's going to be fuel or spark. I'm not looking for codes because codes tell me where the problem, what state the problem's in, and I still got to track down the problem. So codes don't, a good diagnostician, and I've been a master tech for almost 30 years. So I've been around the block. And then another thing is a spark. We need to determine if there's spark, and we need to determine what's causing it to die. And it's either going to be in the ignition system or it's going to be in the fuel system, and that's what needs to be answered. What part of town do you live in? Or does she?
She's like Happy Valley Road and like 62nd Avenue or something like that.
Okay. System and have her watch the light, and so she's driving along and the engine dies and she knows that it flashes rapidly, and then all of a sudden the light goes out and the engine dies and then the car coasts to the side of the road. That's what we need. And then we can go in and look at the crankshaft sensor, the camshaft sensor, the ignition module. We can look at the distributor. We can look at the coils. We can look at all that kind of stuff, but at least we know. The first question that has to be answered, ignition or fuel, that's all there is to it. And this could be something with this ignition switch. And so as she's driving down the road, she should also take where the key goes in, and she should wiggle it, you know, clockwise, counterclockwise. Not enough to shut it off, but wiggle it up and down, forward and backwards, and let's make sure it's not an ignition switch problem. So that would be something that would be a concern as well. So anyway, if I think Action or Kurtz at I-17 and Bell, either one of those guys, they're top-notch guys. They can help her find this problem, but she's going to have to work with them. Otherwise, it's going to cost a lot of money on diagnostics. So they set the car up, and she becomes their eyes, and that's what's best. I got to move on because I got to get Jerry. Jerry, good morning. What is it we can do for you?
Yeah. Say, we've got a Kia Sorento, 2011 model, with that smart key. And one morning it didn't work, so we opened it up, the key fob, and sure enough, the battery had leaked out, and it was, you know, junked up inside. So we cleaned it out and put a battery, new battery back in it, but there's no response.
Okay.
We can't start the car with the smart key.
Right.
And then we called the dealer, and the dealer says, yeah, $480 for a new key fob.
Okay. Who do you do business with now? Well, I don't have much time, but do you have a shop right now?
No, I do not.
Okay. What part of town do you live in?
In Tolleson.
Okay.
I don't know. Thunderbird?
Well, that's no. I'm going to send him to 38th Avenue and Indian School.
Okay.
Larry Harker's. I want you to call Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School, and tell Bob that Mark Salem says that I know he can't fix this, but he should give it his honest try. But this is something we see all the time.
2 minutes.
And we're going to have to reprogram your fob. We're, first of all, we're going to have to check to see if your key, your smart key, it's called the fob, is working. And then we're going to reprogram that to the car, or we might have to get another fob and program it. But the $400 is a number that we beat all the time. Mm-hmm. And so we have that done, and we can do that. But that $400 is a wishful number. Mm-hmm. And it can be done for considerably less. So I would call Larry Harker's Auto. I would make an appointment, talk to Ellen, his wife, make an appointment, and explain to her briefly. Now, can you get the car? You can't even get the car started, can you?
Well, the dealer, I told the dealer, he said, well, you have to have it towed in.
Okay. All right.
But then we looked in the owner's manual, and there is a plug-in in the console.
Okay.
For the... So you can plug it in, and then it'll run.
Okay. Well, that's good, because you're going to... I was going to make another suggestion, but my advice to you is go talk to Bob at Larry Harker's Auto, and I know he can fix it, and I know he's not going to be at $400. So that's my suggestion to you. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is in Mesa, and they are a good place to go. If you're in Mesa, they're on Main Street just east of Stapley. And Brian and Thelma are really good people. They've been around. Thompson's has been in Mesa since 1970. And more important than anything else is others have applied to be on Mark Salem's Best Car Repair Shop list in Mesa. But the only one that's really passed the test in a huge, successful, big way is Brian and Thelma at Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. So if you're in Mesa and you don't have a really good shop, they are centrally located and they really do a good job. And they're very, very honest people. Brian and Thelma at Thompson's Auto Repair. We're going to come back for another hour worth of car, and the lines are open, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem. We'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. We've got another hour of car talk. But I'm going to tell you real quick about a shop on the west side. Now, certainly, you've got lots of places that you can...
Although I was a bit concerned.
Are you back?
I'm on back. Gil, am I there?
I picked up my telephone. I called up my mechanic.
Gil.
Now, he came over right away.
Well, we have crashed again. Start and fix the problem. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960. I want to tell you about S&S Tire real quick. You have a lot of places you can buy tires. But S&S covers the west side really well. They're in Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. They've been around a long time. And the two boys who have taken over the business, two men, I should say, that have taken over their business from their father, Bob, are really great guys. They wouldn't be on my best car repair shop list if they weren't good, honest guys. So if you need tires, here's what you have available. Stop at an S&S. They'll look at your size. They'll give you three prices, good, better, best. And it's really low pressure, no pressure. Here's the information you need, and these are the three tires. So if you're going to turn in a car because of a lease, you might want the cheapest tires. But you might want the middle or you might want the high. So it's up to you. But S&S provides all that stuff as well as alignment, suspension work, tire balancing, vibrations, and stuff like that. So from wheelbarrows to tractors and everything in between, S&S tires in Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. Tom, thank you for holding. And for the rest of you, hang on. But Tom, you're up first. How can I help you? Let's bring Tom up. And Tom, how are you? What can I do for you?
Mark, how you doing, sir?
Good. Thank you very much.
Let's see, I called you a couple weeks ago. I've got a 99 Nissan van, the little plastic nipples that comes from the heater core to the outside. One of them is broken. Open heart surgery to take the dash out and everything. I'm trying to get another plastic nipple, sleeve it inside there, and my $10 question is, should I try a plastic epoxy on it, or would you be a J&B weld? I'm an old J&B weld guy.
I am, too. What's the condition of the broken plastic pipe? What's the condition? Is it brittle?
It seems to be fine, and I think what me or someone else helping me had inadvertently done, you tighten the hoses when the plastic nipples, if you use like a straight nut driver, you're okay. When you put a ratchet, you can put an amazing amount of torque, and
right.
I think I crushed it.
That's it.
All the heater cores I look at, they reuse the old one, which leads me to believe they're serviceable. Your basic 20-year-old deal.
I understand. I think there's two possibilities here. I would using some galvanized pipe. I would buy a variety of threaded galvanized pipe, and I would see if I can comfortably thread those inside that nipple. And I'd do that first, and if it was a nice fit, then JB weld it. And yes, that's what I would do. Now, likewise, if you've got enough of the outside of it showing, you could use a female threaded coupler and go onto the outside of it with your JB weld, and then you could thread your pipe into it, and then you could slide your hose over a galvanized piece of half inch or three quarter inch pipe and tighten it up there. Now keep in mind, we're going to hang a bunch of metal off the end of that nipple. So it would be something that I would want you to tape to something else for stability. And keep in mind that the body moves separate than the engine. So you've got some movement there that we still need some flexible. So I would probably take the hose and do a loop with it. At the end of our contraption, I would do a loop and then back to the motor. And then that loop would give us the flex that we need. But yes, I would either go inside that tube with JB Weld or outside. But I think a threaded component would give you a stronger seal than just JB Weld on two smooth surfaces, if that makes sense. Okay.
All right. Like your idea of looping it to take the boat off, because it is that any of that weight's going to be an enemy of it.
Yes. All righty. Well, good luck, Tom, and just call me back and let me know how we did together. Okay. Thank you very much, buddy. You're up next. How can I help you?
Thank you for taking my call. I have a 2014 Hyundai Equus, and it's a great car. Really enjoy driving it. However, I had a slow leak in the tires in one of the front tires, and when I took it into the tire shop, car side of the tire, right at the edge of the tread, was worn right down to the wire, to the steel, support.
Yes.
And it was on both front tires, and I asked the tire shop guy what he thought caused that. He says, that's the suspension. But I want to go back to my dealership and have them address that issue. Do you have any idea what caused that beyond just a common suspension?
Okay, so it's the driver's side tire, and it's the outside edge of the driver's side tire has worn down significantly to the steel. Yes?
Yeah, no, it's both front tires.
And
it's on the car side. And it's on the car side of the tire.
Okay, so it's on the inside edge of both front tires.
Correct.
Okay, good enough, good enough. How many miles are on it?
Hello?
Yeah, how many miles are on the car you have?
Well, I replaced my tires once already, so I got about 3,000 miles. I think the tires have about, had about 10 or 12,000 miles on them.
No, I want to know how many miles the car has on it.
About 40,000.
Okay, that I you know, if you had 120, I'd say ball joints. But at 40,000, I'm not going to say ball joints. Anybody that's good with alignments is going to hook it up to the rack and see what's the matter with it. The fact that both tires are worn on the inside says that the top of the tire is too far in and the bottom of the tire is too far out. The question is why? Now, sometimes we get people who drive by Braille and they kiss curbs on both sides and they bend the bottom in and the top out. I'm not saying that's you. I'm just saying that's possible. This also could be an alignment that went wrong. This also could be the collapse of the lower ball joints. This also could be a collapse of the upper strut mounts. But a good alignment guy is going to find out why we have too much negative camber, what caused the negative camber, and we need to get back to zero as opposed to a negative number. And so that's really the point. What part of town do you live in, if I can be so bold as to suggest somebody?
I'm out near Carefree.
Oh, boy. I don't have anybody up north. I would go to Air Park Auto, which is on Range Street just east of Hayden. They're a very, very good shop. But I don't have anybody in the Carefree area. I apologize for that. Like, I don't have anybody. What's that other area way up north there on the west side of I-17 way west? I don't have anybody up there either. But Air Park Auto would be the closest one that I would trust that would treat you fairly and have the ability to fix the inside edge wear of both front tires. So if
thank you very much.
You're welcome, buddy.
I got you. Go ahead, Mark.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry about this, folks. Gil, I'm still stuck at 19.2, so I'm going to drop to 16.8 at the next break. I'm going to try to do another rate drop, and if not, we'll just disconnect and start fresh. Let's go to the Lloyd. Lloyd is up next. Lloyd, how can I help you today?
Hey, thanks, Mark. I've got a 2008 F-150. The passenger side window motor, the mechanism broke, and I ordered a new full mechanism, and it was the wrong one. Sent it back, bought another one, and it looked, everything looked good. Put it together, put the door back together, and everything works except when I push the window to go up, it goes down. When I push it down, it goes up.
Okay. More than likely, you switch polarity between the motor and the switch. So we're just switching positive and negative. Did you have to cut any of the connectors out and hook the wires up?
I haven't tried that.
Okay. Well, I'm going to guess that that's what's happened. We've just reversed the polarity between the switch and the motor. So the motor only has two wires, power and ground, and all we're doing is flip-flopping those two wires. So we flip-flop left, and it goes up, and we flip-flop right, and it goes down. And so I would think that pulling the door panel off and swapping those two wires would take care of your problem.
So, that's great. That sounds easy. I think I can handle that.
All righty. Well, good luck, Lloyd. Let me know how that works for you. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Okay. Hey, thank you, Mark.
You're welcome, sir. 602-508-0960. We're going to take a break right now, and we'll be back in about 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes. Well, welcome back, everybody. I am a car repair technician. I am an auto mechanic, but sometimes this radio electronics just drives me crazy. But it's all my fault. It has nothing to do with Gil or KKNT, but I think we've locked up good, and I think we're going to be able to pull a segment off without any problems. But let's just do this. Let's go to Steve. Steve, thank you for holding as long as you have. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning, and Happy New Year to you and your crew.
Thank you.
And I'm Steve, the former 7.3 Power Stroke guru, and your son Alan kind of redirected me in the correct hauler to haul my big fifth wheel with, but my only dilemma is with my 2012 Dodge Ram 3500 dually, I'm looking all through the owner's manual because I would live and breathe scanning the pyrometer and EGT gauge on my poor power stroke, not to overheat it. But I can't find those two gauges on this Dodge. What am I going to do?
Well, I don't know if they're going to be there. I know that I have a 2012 Dodge. Mine's a one-ton with the Cummins 6.7. And I know that Alan put a separate gauge on for my pyrometer. And I know that aluminum melted 1,100. I know that if I flirt with 12, 13, or 14, I'm not going to do it long. and where you put the pyrometer sensor is a big, huge discussion within our industry. Everybody has a different idea where it should be. What we have done is we have put lots of motors under tremendous load, and then we're using a temperature gun to gun the hottest portion or the hottest runner of the exhaust manifold. And that's where we're putting the pyrometer. So we know that it sustained 1,400 degrees coming out of the back end of a Cummins, a Ford, or a Chevrolet. And I say sustained, we're climbing a hill that's going to take 4 minutes. We're probably going to end up with a cooked motor at the top, if it even makes it to the top. But for short spurts, and I pull horse trailers, so I'm comparable to what you're doing, for short spurts, you know, 11, 12, actually north of 12, 13 or 14 for short spurts, especially if my wife tells me to hurry up because she has to go to the bathroom, I'll kick it in the tail end a little bit faster. So I think you should call Alan. I think you should talk to him and see what he's got available. Another thing that we would do is scan your computer to see if that data is in there. And if it is, perhaps we could change that data and bring it out and give it to you. But I think he would have done that on my 12 had he found that. So I'm thinking he didn't, but he would be a good source.
Well, and I was being sarcastic when I was saying that I was looking for those two gauges in the owner's manual because I know that it doesn't have that in it, and it's not the type of motor that you have to consistently watch like my power strokes. I'm very, very pleased with this truck. It's just that I went from the one-ton dually two-wheel drive to, I think it's very similar to your truck, which is the one-ton dually 6.7 four-wheel drive crew cab.
Yeah.
And I'm really pleased with the truck. It seems to be a towing beast.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I've been a Chevrolet guy all my life, and this, my Dodge one-ton dually, because the statute of limitations is over with by now, I want to tell you that I've been in many places at many times where we're climbing hills, and I could have a trailer with a bobcat on the back. I could have a trailer with four horses in it. I could be loaded up to the gills, and I can outrun anybody else. My truck will just stand up on its hind legs and fly. Enough to where my wife is carrying a stun gun now when she travels with me so that she can get my attention quickly for being stupid. But in spite of my advanced age, I really do like the power that I have in that Dodge, and I'm quite sure you will too. So thank you for your call. Thank you very much. Okay, hold on. What do you say, Renee?
The statute of limitations, wasn't that last night? I don't think that.
You know, you can just sit there and be quiet as far as I'm concerned, but you're right. It was last night. You'll remember that Ford was running up the hill. We were running empty, and he was running empty.
And he was screaming, I want to race, I want to race.
No, he didn't scream.
I couldn't see that.
It was telepathic.
Oh, I got it.
Okay? And I hung back for a long time, and then I thought, I'll get close to him to let him know I could track him down anytime I want.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, he decided that he had a little bit of throttle left. But the bottom line is, the guy at the top of the hill was my truck and not his truck. Okay?
Okay.
Come on now. All you're going to do is get me in trouble with our people. Steve, thank you very much. We're leaving that alone right now, buddy. Ray, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, I've got a 2000 Solera that I want to put larger tires on and get a little more ground clearance.
Okay.
I got a hump at the end of my driveway that unfortunately can't be removed. and getting the speedo back to accurate is the big question.
Oh boy, that I don't think you're going to be able to do that. But I can tell you what I have to offer you for free. First of all, I want to tell you that if you get a bigger tire, half of the height difference is on the top of the tire and half of the height difference is on the bottom of the tire. So let me explain that. Let's pretend that you found a tire that was 4 inches higher, taller than the ones you have. That's 2 inches on the top and 2 inches at the bottom. So you're not going to get 4 inches of clearance. You're going to get 2 inches, half of the overall height. As far as the speedometer is concerned, my son has a computer system that will take the old tire and then put a new tire, and it will reprint the door sticker for you, and it will tell you exactly what your new inflations are, properly loaded, your car's properly loaded. Number two, it will also give you the discrepancy on the fuel, on the mileage. So I don't think we can do a 2000 because you might as well be in Fred Flintstone time compared to the 2018s we're working on now. So I'm not being...
All the new stuff's all digital.
Well, but, and here's the deal. On the new stuff,
the
we
old
can...
ones, I know you can switch out the gear that fed the cable to the speedo.
No, there is no more of that. There's an electronic sensor in the transmission, but here's the deal. On the newer ones, we can go in the back door to the ABS module, and a lot of times we can change the tire size, but don't tell anybody, okay? So that's what typically happens on a newer model car, but your car doesn't fall into the newer model car arena. So, but it's okay,
it's
though.
It's in between.
Yeah, it's in between. But here's the deal. If it's really and truly, the diameter of the tire times pi, 2.14, is the circumference, and I'm willing to bet your circumference is going to be kind of minimal. So I'm thinking it's going to be 1 or 2 miles a gallon, 1 or 2 miles difference one way or the other. Here's the deal. You're not going to be able to put down on your title that this is the exact mileage, but you can explain it to the next person. I put bigger tires on it. Now, the other thing you could do is you could have the springs checked, because if there's a sagging in your 18-year-old car, then it might be more money than for tires, but certainly we can hang new springs on there and raise that thing up. Or you could just...
I bought it really cheap. It's got $260,000 on it. And the first thing I had to do was put 4 new struts and a pair of rotors and pads on it.
Okay, but here's the deal. Did you put struts or did you put the complete spring assembly with the strut in it?
Complete assembly.
Okay, then then you've covered the bases.
1 minute.
So I agree. If you still need, you got two choices. Either you can lose some weight so you're not scraping up over that, and I'm just teasing you. But the other option is to get the tires like you said. So, and if you need help, I know that my son, Alan, will reprint your sticker for you for free. It doesn't take long, and we offer that as just, here you go. So, anyway, thank you very much.
60 miles from Payson.
No. We're at Warner and I-10. We're at Warner and I-10 in South Tempe.
Yeah,
you're in Payson?
That's a 300-mile round trip.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
You're
it's 93 miles from Payson from my house.
A 120-mile round trip for me.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's 93 miles from Star Valley to our shop. It's 93 miles.
Yeah.
And so that's
where are you located?
Mile. Yeah, he's here.
Oh, okay.
He's here. So, anyway, those are your shops. I don't know anybody in town that can do it, but I got to go. We'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. We got 30 minutes left, or actually 25 minutes left to the show. We've only got two callers, so now's your chance. Jump in, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to go to Larry. Larry, thank you for holding. How can I help you today?
Hi, good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
I've got a 05 Altima and a 02 CRV. And they both have the same problem along with half the cars in the grocery store parking lot. They have foggy headlights.
Yes.
And I go wash the car. It looks great for about a minute and a half. And then as soon as I dry it, 1 minute later, it's cloudy again. And I notice half the cars that are 10, 15 years old have the same problem.
Okay, I have an answer for you. You have two choices. You can go buy these little wet wipes at the auto parts store,
and you can wipe your headlights off, and that will return some of the shiny and luster to them. But if you want something that's far more permanent, then I'll give you an example. 3M makes a kit that costs me $2,000. And the kit comes with a variety of polishers and cleaners and all this kind of stuff. And so I know other shops have these. And I can tell you that we charge $89 mm-hmm. for two headlights. We bring them back to brand new specifications. And if you don't like it, you don't have to pay for it. And ours are lasting between a year and a half and three.
Yeah.
So the customers of ours say that that's what they're saying to us, is that the pristine look of it lasted for another year and a half before they began to shade up again. So it's a 3M compound. It's a 3M polish. And really and truly what we have to do is we have to mask off both of your headlights. And then it's a 6 or 7-part process.
Yeah, it takes a while.
And it takes a while.
It's a mess, too.
And, yeah, we have white stuff on big polishers and buffers that flies all over everything. We're going to protect your car, but the shop looks like crazy afterwards. But nevertheless, my suggestion to be is call around and see who has the 3M headlight polishing. And I think we're all going to be in about the same dollar amount. And I would look for that. But you can also go to the auto parts store, and they've got a variety of chemicals you can use. But it's my experience, none of them last longer than 30 days or something like that.
A little more temporary.
Yeah, it's real temporary. Okay?
Well, my wife says if I worry about something like that, then life must be good. So I guess there's a little more to life than, I guess, cloudy headlights, huh?
Well, and I think, can we just talk between the two of us for a minute? The path
sure,
of least,
no one's listening.
Yeah, no one's the path of least resistance is the one you're taking.
Thanks, Larry.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait a minute, Renee's listening.
That's
so.
Right.
You know, it's just
all right,
you and
thank
me.
Thank you.
It's just you and me and Renee. All righty. And Gil, did you
and
hear
Gil,
the engineer
yeah,
goes, thanks,
yeah,
Larry. Nobody else is listening.
Yeah, exactly.
All righty, Dan. Dan, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes, I have a 2003 Grand Caravan with about 95,000 miles on it, and it's getting old, but I'm wanting to keep it, and it's running good, and I'm trying to find a place that can fix the automatic doors on it. I've had it to the dealer, and they put some grease all over the place, and it didn't help, and had a couple little minor shops, and they just oil some stuff. It doesn't seem to work.
Okay.
I was wanting to know,
let me ask you some symptoms.
Who would you recommend?
Okay, I want to ask you some symptoms first. So the automatic door locks, are you activating the automatic door locks with a key fob or something like that?
No, it's not the door locks. It's the automatic doors, the motor driven doors on the sliding doors and the hatch.
Okay. Okay. So we're talking about sliding doors.
When it's cold in the morning, they will unlatch and not roll, or they will roll halfway, or they will, you know, not work at all. Or,
okay.
But when it warms, typically when it warms up, or after I've used them 3 or 4 times, then they start working. So I'm assuming it's lubrication on internal stuff.
Yeah, I don't know that I would agree with you, but that's a very difficult one to diagnose. Let me ask you a question: when you manually open or close the door, how much effort does it take on a 1 to 5 scale? Is it a 1, real easy, or is it a 5, I'm working pretty hard?
I have manually opening them, I can do it, but yet it feels a little resistance to it.
Okay. The real question is, are we feeding the motor? Are we firing up the motor? Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and we're just going to go to Dan right off the bat. Dan, I'm really sorry about this. Hopefully, we'll be able to do the next 20 minutes, okay? But I'm all ears. Go ahead with your question.
Okay, it's the Dodge Caravan with the sliding doors.
Yeah. We have a caravan as well. It's one of our customer shuttle buses. And I think somebody really needs to go in and have you be their eyes and their ears, and let's do some testing.
I know that I would probably loop the circuit breaker, and I would give you a digital amp meter, and I would say, I want you to tell me what the amp draw is on open and close in the cold, or what the reading is, and what it is hot. So I would want you involved in this to help me determine. I'd also want to physically open and close the doors and feel what they're like. What part of town do you live in?
West Side, the west side of Goodyear.
Okay. I would feel very comfortable if you would call Larry Harker's Auto at 38th Avenue and Indian School. I know Bob could help you with this. He's an old gray-haired guy. He's smarter than I am. He's really, really good at what he does.
Yeah.
And
what I was going to say? It seems to me that we had a van like this, and we had to actually reprogram the doors, which sounds weird, but...
No, you're right. You're right.
So I don't know if it's, you know, his year or a little bit newer, but...
No, you're right. I remember that van. The problem is that wouldn't work ever.
Ever, okay.
Yeah, and he's okay when it's hot, but not when it's cold.
I don't know.
The reprogramming is the computer had lost the ability to see the doors, and we had to reestablish that connection. But you're right. But, Dan, I would just go to Larry Harker's. And you need to look him in the eye, and you say to him, spray and grease all over this thing ain't working. I need a little more in depth from that, and tell me what your diagnostic charge is going to be.
Shop spray grease all over you.
Yeah. That didn't
so
help.
I'm just that's what I want you to tell him is the spray and grease on it hasn't helped anything. So you know, what's your diagnostic charge? And I would suggest that you have your wife or somebody follow you and leave it there with him, because he's going to need it overnight at least twice. So he's going to need it the next morning to run some tests on it and then do the work, and then he's going to want to check it the next morning. And I would suggest that that's in your best interest. But I can't possibly give you an estimate because I really don't know what it is. How many doors have you got? Two on that? Or you got one on each side, or just one on one side?
Two sliding doors, and the hatch in the back had recently started acting up.
Okay.
And it actually had one of the joints that hold the mechanism popped out, so it's not even connected anymore.
Okay. This could also be some kind of a relay that we've worn out. This relay is substandard, and it's passing on of voltage to the components. So, like I said, Bob's a gray-haired guy. This is right up his alley. I'm proud to send you there, but it's called Larry Harker's Auto.
Hi, Jim. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
I want to thank you for being on the radio and for your intellect on automobiles. I just have two quick questions. One, for years I went to a auto repair shop here in Surprise, and I went up there a couple weeks ago to get an oil change, and they had sold out. I don't know anything about the new owners. One of the best things about a business is being able to trust them, and so I don't know yet if I do. So far, so good. But I need some advice. They noticed while they were doing the oil change that I had a valve cover leak, and they went and repaired that. And they noticed at the time when they had the cover off that the spark plugs, which are original, I have a 2000 RAV4, and he said that the mechanic said that they're really shot. And so they replaced the spark plugs and the wiring to the spark plugs because they were cracked. And I was quoted a price for the whole thing to be over a little over $300. But then when I paid the bill, he only charged me $250.
Okay.
And I was just wondering if you thought that was a fair price.
Okay. Let me comment real quick. First of all, there's lots of places that are selling right now. And in order to buy my shop, and I'm not for sale, they're going to have to raise my prices because I ain't giving it away for free. So they're going to have to raise my prices. There's been a lot of movement in that arena, lots and lots of movement. So that's happening.
Oh, okay.
And so we have to start selling stuff in order to make the light bill. We have to raise the sales. Now keep in mind, an auto repair shop keeps 10, if he's lucky, he keeps 10% of his gross as net. So he gets to, and then he pays 4 cents of that 10 cents to Uncle Sam. So really and truly, we're working on 6 cents of every dollar as profit. So we have to raise and lower our prices based on our debt service. as far as their job is concerned, I always overbid my work. Always. It's a sin to be 1 cent over my estimate. My staff knows what kind of a volcano they'll happen when we bid 500 and we come in at 555. I don't put up with that. Somebody's going to eat the $55. It's going to be the tech or the service writer. So I'm impressed that they came in at 300, and I'm impressed that they estimated them 300 and that they charged you 250. I'm impressed. How many miles has a car gone on it, real quick?
Just turned 96,000.
And I like the spark plugs. I'm going to tell you right now, that says spark plugs to me. So valve cover gaskets and a full set of spark plugs and wires for $250?
That is
way cheap. Yeah. If you hadn't have given me the 250, I'd have bet that at 500. So I'd have betted it twice
as
much.
I threw the credit card out right away when he said that, you know.
Yeah.
He noticed that the hoses are corroding at the ends and that I have a very small leak in the radiator. Now, this is all original equipment.
Right.
17 years old. So he came up with his estimate was like 650.
Mine's higher than that.
And all the holes.
Yeah, mine's higher than that. I agree that your hoses need to be replaced, your belts and your hoses, because my personal limit is 8 years, 80,000 miles, and you're way past both of those. If he's got a radiator leak, now's the time to do it. There's going to be a savings of labor and a savings of flush and a savings of coolant. So I agree, but my estimate's going to be twice as much as his. I don't know how he's doing that, but if he can pull that off, then God bless him. And maybe he's sending some stuff out the door to keep the customers. Maybe he's biting the bullet. I don't know the answer. I'm not uncomfortable with the prices, and I'm not uncomfortable with what he said based on the mileage. So I'm pretty happy about that. I got to move on. And we just talked to Jim, and then we're going to go to Sam. Sam, how can I help you?
Oh, yeah. How you doing, Mark?
Good, good.
Got an 08 Altima. It's my grandson's. He was driving it the other day, and he said all of a sudden it started heating up on him, and he just left our house, so he's only gone like a couple of miles. I told him, well, see if you can check the coolant and the belt to see if this, belt is still on or whatever. This is like 9 o'clock at night. And so he's out there with a flashlight looking, and he said, well, the belt is on there, but it's not on right. It's just loose. So I said, all right, well, I'll drive down there. So we got down there, and we looked at it with flashlights, and the belt is in good condition, but I do not see any kind of tensioner on there anywhere. I see the pulley for the alternator, for the AC, for the motor, for the power steering, but I don't see a pulley, an idler pulley or a tensioner. Okay. Something's got to be there, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, there has to be an adjustment or a tensioner, a spring load tensioner. So you're right about that. I can't picture this in my head, but you're right about that. And if the belt is loose and it's not driving the water pump, then we hope he didn't drive it deep into an overheat, which is going to blow the head gaskets and cause engine damage. So in this particular case, you just have to. Now, when it's cold, you're going to be able to drive it with no cooling system for at least, three, four, five blocks. That's no problem. So get it to where you need it to go. But we need a professional pair of eyes. And the question is why is the belt loose? What happened? And frankly, us gray-haired guys aren't going to spend more than 15 or 20 minutes coming to that conclusion. It'll take longer to bid the work than it does to diagnose the work. So if you have a shop close by, I'd take them.
Yeah, he said it sounded like he ran over something. Like he was driving and this thing was loose and it fell off.
Okay. Well, that would suggest the harmonic balancer came off the front of the crankshaft. And you better say your prayers tonight, because the harmonic balancer can take the front of the crankshaft with it. It doesn't usually do that, but when it does, we're talking thousands of dollars worth of repair. If not, that's great, because the harmonic balancer, just we put a new one on and we're done. Now, if it shed its outer shell, it's a two-piece. It's got a hub, then it's got a big band of rubber, and then it's got the pulley. If it sheds the pulley because the rubber disintegrated, that's a great idea. Then all of a sudden we put a new harmonic balancer on it. Bingo, bingo, you're done. Your bill might be 300, depending on the cost of the balancer. 300 or 400. You're looking at me kind of funny.
I I still see, you know, the harmonic, the pulley, the serpentine belt pulley, the grooves and all that on the crankshaft, everything.
Okay.
But
well,
I don't see where that tensioner would go.
Okay. Well, I can't guess looking at your eyes. I don't know. I can tell you, like I said, I can tell you that most of us are going to be able to diagnose that in 15 minutes or less. But I don't know. I obviously, if the belt's loose, something's wrong. And I suggest to you that you don't have the skills necessary to look at everything and know that it's lined up or where it's loose. But it only takes 3 minutes for master techs like me to look at it to know that it does have a tensioner or it doesn't, or it's got an adjustable alternator that takes the tension on the whole system or something like that. So that's what we've got. For the rest of you, let me tell
Tim
you that
Tim is your next caller, Tim.
And Tim, hang on right now. My email is mark@marksalem.com. If you have a question and we screwed up the show because we kept dropping off, then send me an email, mark@marksalem.com, and give me your phone number, and I'll call you from my blocked cell, and we'll talk. So I'm going to offer you that right now. Tim, we ought to be quick, so tell me what you got, buddy.
All right, I got a Suburban, a Chevy 350, blew a head gasket 2 years ago. I replaced it myself. Everything was doing good. I decided to put a new water pump on, did that. Got a new radiator. I put that in. Now I'm getting back pressure, and it's blowing into my overflow. It's not leaking. It's not coming out the exhaust. I don't have any water.
Okay. We're not going to do this. This doesn't work. Because it's going to be one of the things that you just cited. It has to be. The only other possibility is that we have the ability to test the radiator cap. We look at the cap and it says 14 pounds. So we then hook it to an attachment and we put 14 pounds in it. It better hold. When we go 15 or 16, it has to bypass. So if you want a wild guess, go put a new Stant radiator cap on it and see what happens. Otherwise, we have an internal combustion leak, or we have a thermostat that's stuck, or we have something that's causing the engine to overheat and the pressure to exceed the ability of the cap to contain it. So, I mean, you can tell me you've put everything new on it and everything else, but I'm going to tell you that one of the things that you've said is going to be wrong. So I would, if I were you, I'd put a cap on it first. Okay, Strictly Diesel is in North Phoenix. He's a new addition to our repair shop list, and he's a good one. He knows diesels really, really well. He knows service. He knows accessories. He knows diagnostics. He knows that. And he does both foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. Strictly Diesel Service and Repairs at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road in North Phoenix. They're open Monday through Friday from 8 to 5. And you can go to their website, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, and they sell parts online 24 hours a day on their website. So you can also see the information on them by going to marksalem.com, click on Best Car Repair Shops, and then click on Diesel and Strictly Diesel's information. And that goes for any of the shops on my list. Go to marksalem.com, then you're going to click on
Best
first, and then you're going to go to Mechanical, Tires, General Repair, Paint and Body, and Diesel.
Transmissions.
Yes. And so you'll pick that, and then I'll tell you who the guys are in your particular area. Thank you for spending your Saturday with me. I'm sorry we screwed up the show so bad. I take responsibility for that, and hopefully next week we'll have it all fixed up. But again, mark@marksalem.com. I'll be there for you.